Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to this Failed Critics Star Wars The Last Jedi special. I am Steve Norman. I am joined by Paul Field.
Afternoon, fellas. Not evening. No, afternoon.
And Dave Valentine.
Good evening. I did the same thing. Good afternoon, fellas.
No, well, it is dark, it's nearly. Dark,
yeah. Yeah, it's getting there. The sun is setting, both on today and this podcast.
I can see two sun settings from where I am.
But yeah, so this is our Last Jedi special. Obviously, we've done a Star Wars special each year the last 2 years before this, when we've had The Force Awakens and Rogue One. So we've done exactly the same today, and we've got rid of the miserable fun sponge Owen, who doesn't like Star Wars, for this episode. We are going to do our usual Star Wars quiz. We are going to review The Last Jedi, and that review will contain spoilers. And then we're just going to do, as we've had 5 years of Failed Critics, and it is seemingly, sadly, coming to pretty much an end. We're going to do our five favourite films of the last 5 years, and our one worst film as well.
Shall I do a quiz, Steve?
Yeah, go on then.
Right, boys, a real simple one. This is just going to take it in turns answering questions. And if you don't get it right, it will pass to your opponent to pick up a bonus point. So really simple. So, Dave, hello. Would you like to go first or would you like to go second?
I would like to go first, please.
Okay. How many languages is C-3PO fluent in?
It's... I'm fluent in over... 4 million forms of communication.
That is not correct. So today, Steve, early chance for you to get a bonus point here.
I'm sure he says in one of the original films he's fluent in over 6 million.
Yes, well done, Steve. So, Steve, your question: which character is partially named after George Lucas's son? I'm not narrowing it down any more than that for you, unfortunately.
I have no idea, so I'm going to take a wild guess at Finn.
No. Dave, any ideas?
No, that's a good guess. This is a question I've never actually heard before. I'm guessing it's going to be the prequel or new trilogy. Actually, probably not new trilogy. It might be prequel.
Oh, it is one of the prequels.
Oh, God. Who was new? How about Mace Windu?
No, it's the it's Dexter Jetstar.
Oh, Jesus.
Do you know who that is?
The worst character in the whole of Star Wars.
the one who owned the diner.
That's him.
Oh, God. Oh, that. And George Lucas named that after his child.
I think his son must be called Dexter.
Oh well.
Okay. Well. Right. Dave,
hello.
Back to you. Which film does the camera pan back up the crawl at the beginning of? It only happens once in the original six films.
It does.
But which of those six films does it pan back up the crawl?
Revenge of the Sith.
Is not the right answer. Steve, chance to steal.
Is it Empire Strikes Back?
No, it's not. It's Attack of the Clones.
No one remembered that.
Exactly. Right, Steve, in the original Star Wars film, how many drawbacks are there in the scene where R2 and C-3PO first land in the desert?
In the original version?
In the original, because there's a change in number for the special edition.
Yeah.
He obviously added stuff. But how many of those drawbacks were there in the original?
The original, just one.
Not correct. Dave, do you want to have a guess?
What's a drawback?
The animals that the stormtroopers are riding.
Oh, those things with the big tusks.
Like the dinosaur thing.
Yeah, they look like an elephant type of thing.
Yeah, two of them.
There are two of them. That's a point each. I'm going to give a bonus point question here. First one to shout out the right answer. How many were there in the special edition?
Five.
Yes, Steve. Well done. So, whose question is this? It's yours, isn't it, Dave?
Yes.
What was the original name of the first Star Wars film?
Is it The Adventures of Luke Starkiller?
It is The Adventures of Luke Starkiller. Like well done, Dave. That's 2 points all. It's tight. Steve.
Yes.
You're good on vehicles in the Star Wars universe.
Okay.
What does AT-AT stand for?
All-Terrain Armoured Transport.
It does indeed stand for All-Terrain Armoured Transport. Well done, you take the lead. Dave, this is another numbers one. This is a tricky one. Right. There's probably you either know or you don't know, because I imagine guessing is going to be quite difficult. Okay. But what odds does 3PO give Han of navigating an asteroid field?
It's 3,420 to 1.
Oh, that's not correct.
It's close though, isn't it?
It's really close.
Is it like 3,600 something?
Oh, you're closer, but both of you are wrong. It's 3,720. To be fair, I'm impressed, Dave, that you got even close. Steve,
I've had worse accumulators than that, though.
Yeah, none of them have come in.
No.
Steve, this is your one, I believe. You're 3-2 up at the moment. In Jedi, who is Lando Calrissian's co-pilot in the Millennium Falcon?
The mate using these ones, Nian Num.
Bloody hell, that's a really good answer, that, and it's absolutely right. Well done.
Sorry to Mr. Num if I pronounced his name wrong.
It's Nian Num.
Yeah. One with the jowly face.
Yeah, that's it, yeah, because everyone can picture him. I wouldn't have known his name until I was researching earlier, doing questions.
He was my favourite boy as a kid, Nian Num.
Oh, did you know it as well?
I knew that, yeah. I loved Nian Num.
I didn't know his name.
Strange how they can get him back for these films, but not Lando. Like, he's turned up. Lando's fucked right off.
Do you think he's do you think Lando's been sex-pesting or something?
I think he's U-treed.
You reckon?
Space U-tree.
Has he been fiddling with some younglings?
Yeah.
Well, see, Dave, I knew I'd get that joke in somewhere.
Yeah, good one on the younglings.
I think he'll be back in the next one.
You think?
Yeah.
I had that same thought.
Because now, well, we'll come on to it later. But yeah, I think he'll be back. But anyway, let's do some quizzing.
Dave.
Yes.
I think you're going to get this, but what is the name of Boba Fett's ship?
Slave One.
It is Slave One.
I'm all about the old school.
Steve, you're still in the lead 4-3. You're running out of questions. But, Steve, I think you're going to get this. Who is Anakin's main rival in the pod race?
Sebulba.
Is Sebulba. Dave, you need to get this. Have you seen, Dave, the Star Wars Holiday Special?
Was that the question?
Yeah, yes, I have. Correct answer.
Just have you seen it? Yes, well done. 1 point.
Well, if you remember back to the Rogue One podcast last year, yes, I saw it years and years ago, but I tried to rewatch it again last year, but it made me feel a bit nauseous. So, yes, I have seen it.
Are you ready for the question?
Go on.
What date is Wookiee Life Day?
Is it December 25th?
It's not December the 25th. Do you want to have a guess, Steve?
Pancake Tuesday.
No, it's November the 17th, apparently. There you go.
Well, they have November the 17th in space.
Well, mate, if you've seen the Star Wars Holiday Special, you'll know that's the least of his worries.
Oh, yeah.
Steve, I'm going to be seriously impressed if you get this, but where was Luke originally headed to pick up some power converters?
He was going to the Toshi station.
That is correct.
Great, Steve.
Bloody hell. Did you know that, Dave?
No.
He's going to meet up with Biggs, won't he?
How did you know that? I am seriously impressed that you knew that.
Because I'm not a nerd or a geek in any way, except when it comes to Star Wars, and it's the only thing. It's weird because it's not the kind of thing that I do. I don't like... I like sci-fi and that, but I'm not like a sci-fi nerd. It's just with Star Wars, I know stuff.
Blimey. Dave, which month were the first 6 Star Wars films all released in?
In this country or in America?
In America, yeah. Because obviously now they're always released in December, but that wasn't the case previously.
It's a new tradition that their film that they're set in, released in December in this country and around the world. So yeah, originally, what was it, May?
It was May.
Yeah,
pulled a point back.
Made a four.
Exactly. Is that intentional? Do we reckon?
No, it can't be. Steve.
Yes.
What species is Yoda?
It's never been revealed in canon.
It has never been revealed.
But there was another one in the prequels. There's a girl Yoda Jedi in the council. But they've never said what species it actually is.
Well, that was the last question. And I have to say, you've absolutely romped home, Steve. 7 points to Dave's four.
Oh, well done, Steve.
Did you have a tie break?
I did.
Shall we do it? Because it's a shame for you to actually go through that trouble and not to ask it.
Absolutely. The first 3 days takings for Last Jedi to the nearest million. How much? Go on, Dave.
3 days, 412.
731.
No, it's 215.
Right.
Which is still a lot.
I guess it is.
And up. That's still like record-breaking kind of numbers.
Yeah, in 3 days, actually, yeah, that is a hell of a lot. Well done, Steve. Good quiz and a good quiz, Paul.
Yeah, always a good quiz from Paul.
I'm still in shock that you got some of those right because they were quite tough.
You find a difficult Star Wars quiz while we're doing this. I'll try and do another one at the end. You know, come out with some answers. I'm pretty good with it.
That and football. I researched it and some of the questions came from like, you know, the world's toughest Star Wars quiz. To be fair, one of the ones I went on for the like really tough quizzes had questions involving everything that was canon. So all those books and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was looking at like, you know, put these battles in order of date. And, you know, five of the battles I'd never heard of, very much seven on the list. To put those seven in order, I was like, whoa.
Yeah. If you ask me, technical stuff about the films being made and that, no chance. But if you ask me, like, actual stuff about the films and the plots and the characters, for some reason, that and football trivia, I'm a fucking ace on.
That's interesting, Steve, because I'm pretty much the opposite. I know much more about the behind-the-scenes stuff than I do about the expanded universe and all the characters and things.
Well, see, if there's ever a Star Wars quiz for some good money, we'll join up we'll nail it between us. We won't, because there'll be some proper geeks out there.
Although I did read something recently about the canon. You know IG-88... Skeletal bounty hunter robot.
Yeah.
In one of the books, Bosk, the other bounty hunter.
Yeah.
IG-88 went to Bosk's wedding, and that's my favourite canon fact.
I've got to look because I was doing research earlier, and one of the questions which didn't make the cut. You know those? You know where all the bounty hunters are lined up in Empire?
Yeah. Yeah.
One of them is wearing a costume recycled from a TV show. Ooh. Does anyone know which TV show?
Doctor Who?
It is Doctor Who.
I suppose that makes sense because they were all shot here, weren't they, in the UK?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is this, like some random...
Just a Dalek hanging around.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. I think I had him as a toy. I think he's the guy in orange.
Oh. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah. On to The Last Jedi, it picks up pretty much straight off the bat where The Force Awakens ended, Force Awakens from 2 years ago. So Rey has found Luke Skywalker and has gone to seek him out, A, to get training from him, and B, to get him back to help the rebellion, resistance. And the First Order had their ultimate Death Star thing destroyed, but they are still a pretty intimidating force and are working their way on wiping out the Republic and the Resistance, and that's what kind of where we start off.
That huge opening battle scene.
Yeah,
gotta say it was really impressive.
It was exciting and it was impressive. It looked good and that was kind of what Star Wars should be.
Yeah.
I mean, to open it was great.
Yeah, excellent opening scene. Although before the battle, we had a little bit of comedy, courtesy of Poe Dameron.
Yes.
Which was, there was a murmur went round the cinema when I saw it, thinking, that's a weird way to open it. But then we all went with it, and it was pretty funny. Now, I've seen some criticisms of it, saying it's very modern humour put into a Star Wars film, but I thought it worked.
I thought, we might as well talk about the humour in this one in general, because, yeah, they've always had, all Star Wars films have always had funny parts or intentions of humour in it. I thought it worked really well in The Force Awakens and Rogue One, but it just seemed to be a lot of it in The Last Jedi. There seemed to be a lot of, it was almost like watching a Marvel film in so much as there was lots of quips and jokes of that nature, which work in those films for the most part, but it just seemed like some of the jokes in this and the one-liners and the sight gags were funny, but it just seemed like they were laying on a bit thick.
I think
it didn't quite work all the time.
I think it was completely intentional. Everyone went in thinking it's going to be a dark one like Empire was, but they did a bit of misdirection and it was a lot lighter than we all thought it was going to be.
It definitely had its dark moment.
It certainly did, but for me, almost all of the humour worked. I was really pleased with it.
Yeah.
Really? I'm the opposite end of the scale. I did not... It's set in a galaxy far, far away, and I'm guessing if you compared it to Earth timelines, way, way in the future, jokes about being on hold, like from, you know, a sitcom setting Basingstoke in the 70s, I didn't appreciate that. And the one I really, really hated was the where he ducked, like, the brushes his shoulder off. I don't want to have, like, our world gags in the Star Wars universe. That's not a thing. That really pulled me out of it.
I did think it was funny when he chucked the lightsaber away, though, when Rey passed it to him and he just hoied it over his shoulder.
Well, I've got an interesting thought on that, because did either of you two rewatch Force Awakens going into Last Jedi?
Yes.
Did you see it immediately before? Because I did the double bill. I went to the cinema, saw Force Awakens, then there was a 20-minute gap, then we did Last Jedi. So
I watched it on Friday, so...
So, and when did you see Last Jedi? Yesterday?
Saturday, yeah.
Okay. So, yes, it is quite a funny scene, but then there is that jarring moment that the end of The Force Awakens was so dramatic, and it was like a monumental moment. Everything had been built into that. Cut to him tossing the lightsaber over his shoulder. And again, it was a little bit unexpected, and I had some unusual feelings about Luke, but then it occurred to me, well, he's just being Yoda in Empire. He's just being a bit kooky and eccentric.
Yeah. And he's been isolated on his own with some weird aliens that he milks.
Oh.
Not literally, that's a completely different film, which that will actually be in the parody version.
Yeah.
Oh.
Should we move on to the island then? Obviously, we've done the opening battle, which was immense. I loved all the stuff, especially the bombers.
Yeah.
I mean, the visual for all those bombs and stuff I thought was really cool as well, although I'm sure militarily and practically that's probably not going
to
work.
I mean, we've got actually come on to something a couple of things directly from this battle. So from this battle, we lost Admiral Akbar and a lot of the high command of the resistance, but we also had flying Leia.
Yeah, that really annoyed me as well.
That was rubbish.
I thought, oh, they've seen her off early then. Because, she's no longer with us in real life, I thought.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've binned her off early, and back she came.
Yeah. Because that death didn't work for me. It didn't. When I saw her, I thought, well, that's a... Because I thought that was it, like you did. I thought, that's a bit of a rubbish way to get rid of her. There's not really any... There's no great moment. Like Han being killed off in The Force Awakens, it was his son killed him off just at the moment he was about to bring his son back. It was quite a big moment, and it felt big. It felt kind of, if you're going to kill off a character of that nature, it felt like a good way to do it. And then that happened, and then she woke up in the void of space and then started flying like Mary Bloody Poppins.
Yeah.
All she needed was a brolly, and it would have been... And it just didn't...
It didn't feel very Star Wars-y, did it? Because no one's ever survived in space before. But she is also a Force user and daughter of Darth Vader, so she's very, very strong with it. And we don't know what she's been doing in the last 20
years. No, but it's just that bit of her using the Force to get back in from space into the ship. Fine, there's a concept. Yeah, I'm sure must be really Force sensitive because of her family, and Luke probably taught her a thing or two before he went missing, before he went away. You know, that whole idea of that is fine. It's just the way it looks.
Yeah.
It looks shonky. It looks awful.
Everything slowed down, and then she started freezing, and then she flew back up. I wasn't completely keen on it, but again, I just went with it.
Yeah. But yeah, so then we had Luke, on his island in exile. Rey finds him. And
this is a carbon, well, not carbon copy, but this is the same template as when Luke goes to, I can't remember the name of the planet, where he meets Dagobah. Yoda. Dagobah, of course.
Yeah, and a lot of the same things happen there, because you had, you had the X-Wing crashed underwater that we saw.
Yep, we saw that. That was a nod. I was expecting that to be, I was waiting for it to come out, but sadly not.
You had some cave where the dark side is kicking up.
Yep.
And the young apprentice goes into the cave and has some kind of vision. We even get Yoda, which was great.
Yep.
Being a bit of a dick.
But we didn't get a training montage.
No, which was a shame. I mean, everyone loves a montage. We didn't get that, but I thought it was quite good because you could see. I thought Luke was Mark Hamill was great in this film.
Oh yeah.
I thought he was when you see him in the original films, and you see him in this film, and you think, why hasn't he had much work?
Because he's Luke Skywalker.
Because he's pretty good. Like in this, he's really good at playing. You know, he plays this really conflicted person who's withdrawn himself from everything, and he's had all this trauma, and he's, you know, all this bad stuff has happened, and you can see how withdrawn he is, how he's struggling with everything, how he's struggling with being effectively at that point the last Jedi, how the order under him collapsed, how his nephew turned to the dark side and destroyed everything that he had built, how he's been isolated for so long on his own, and then how he kind of comes back to the forefront, how he comes back to believing in himself and believing in Rey, and you know, it's a really good performance from Mark Hamill, and Luke really comes on through this film. Like, really.
You're absolutely right, mate. He was really good. But what they because there's a scene or two scenes there where you get two sides of a story with what happened with Luke and Kylo. That didn't seem that believable to me. Either of them, to be fair. I felt that was a bit clunky in its storytelling.
The thing was, I found with this film, I like the film. I think it's a good film. It's not a great film. I like The Force Awakens and Rogue One more, I'd say. But there's a lot of good things in this film. I don't think any of the characters were bad or bad characters, but some of the plots in the film or the storylines and some of the things that the characters did were not so great. So, I mean, like that bit I was fine with. But if you look at Finn and Rose as characters, I thought they were quite good. I mean, I love Finn from The Force Awakens. I thought Rose was okay, but their side plot was prequel level stuff and just uninteresting and ultimately pointless.
Yeah. Yeah, completely pointless. Should we try? Let's try and sort of run through the film as the kind of plot develops. So we've had the opening battle. We've gone to the island. Yoda obviously appears. Any thoughts on Yoda appearing?
I was really, really pleased to see Yoda, and especially because he seemed much more puppet-like than he did.
Well, yeah, I think it was good to see puppety Yoda, and there's a lot more practical effects in this than there was in the prequel. So those little caretaker people on the island Luke was on, they were like animatronic, but they weren't CGI. And a lot of the kind of aliens, you know, Neon Num and Aberrant, they seem to be more practical effects rather than CGI. So I just think I think it just looks better.
Exactly. I think one of the issues with when he appears is the motivation for him being there, in that they make a big deal of this Jedi temple with the books in.
Yeah.
But in the previous films, this has never been mentioned. You're suddenly introduced to this thing and then it's destroyed within 10 minutes. So it doesn't... Do you know what I mean? There wasn't...
None of the films ever really looked at the history of the Jedi, like, long term. Like,
if it had been touched upon in the first three films, for example, this mythical Jedi temple or library or whatever it might be that is mentioned even in passing, and then it's revealed to be in this film, but it wasn't. This is the first we've heard about it, and then it's gone straight away.
Yeah, I suppose it's symbolic of him saying the Jedi have to end.
Well, maybe.
So, but then, we find out at the end of the film that somehow the books survived. So, did we see that? Did you both catch that?
No.
It's on the Millennium Falcon at the end of the film. So, after Rey had rescued everybody on the Falcon... Mm-hmm. Got them all out of the resistance base and rescued them. I think Finn opened a drawer or a cupboard or something to retrieve something for somebody, and I can't remember what it was for, but in that drawer you could see all the books that were in that temple. So I don't know who got them out. I don't think it was Luke, whether it was Yoda being a knob or Rey taking them before she left Luke on his own.
Yes, that was in the script notes. Yoda being a knob.
he was a bit though, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It was like, when you first see him in Empire Strikes Back, he's just winding Luke up because Luke doesn't know who he is, just thinks he's some annoying little alien creature. He's just winding him up.
But it was so nice to see him back though, and Frank Oz's voice is something so nostalgic about him. And
I did think we might get another Force Ghost, but then I just thought, how are you going to do it? Because if you want to do Obi-Wan Kenobi, you've got to go with Ewan McGregor. You can't do Alec Guinness, obviously.
Why not? Yeah, you can see, and with that Force Ghost blue glow around them, you could probably cut a few corners and get away with a few things.
I mean, Alec Guinness would literally turn in his grave about being pulled back into it now. But
he went to his grave a very, very wealthy man thanks to someone that he hated. So he,
that's true.
And it's coming from someone that loves Alec Guinness.
And then I thought, you can't do Darth Vader or Anakin because you'd have to bring back Hayden Christensen, and he ain't doing anything. Well, no, he's got nothing on, has he?
Hang on, let me just check his diary for you. Nope, he's free.
Yeah. But I thought that was one of the best bits of the film, was the whole bit on the island with Luke and him training Rey. And what do we think of Rey and Kylo Ren communicating each other through the Force across space?
I thought it worked.
Yeah.
It's a side of the Force that we've not seen before. And
we have
in bits, because when Luke was on Bespin calling out to Leia, and then when they were both in Return of the Jedi, they're both on him and Vader were on different ships kind of communicating with each other. Something we've seen, but not over that vast a distance.
The way it was actually portrayed, the way they could actually see each other, I thought it was done in a very interesting, different way.
Yeah.
No, I preferred not to be miserable, but I preferred the old way where it was just words and vagueness and glimpses of what might be happening. All of a sudden, they've put up mobile phone masks and they've got all you can eat data, and they're having a chat over FaceTime. Oh. I didn't buy into that at all. That's not how it's ever been portrayed before. The way you can communicate through the Force, it's always been little snatches or glimpses, or your awareness of somebody being there. Never full on complicated conversations.
It's very, very simple. But the problem is that The Force Awakens got criticised so much for not doing anything new, and I've seen The Last Jedi get criticised for doing too many different things. So I think it is an interesting situation in which they found themselves. And
so after that, Rey leaves the island or that planet, Acto, that planet was called as well, for heat of my trivia stats there.
Okay.
She left that in the same manner Luke left Dagobah, as in, training's not done yet, but stuff's happening, I've got to go.
That's a very good point. Also, how long do you think she spent on the island?
That's a really good question.
If you think about her story, Force Awakens zipped along so quickly in a matter of days, it seemed.
I don't think this was over a great period of time, because if you look at it, the big part of the plot revolved around the Rebel fleet being caught, and they jumped from light speed to catch them. So I think it's only the whole thing over a couple of days. I mean, when Finn and Rose had to go off to get the Codebreaker, they had about 12 hours to do it.
Exactly.
So I think it's only over a couple of days. So she can't have been... I suppose it depends... how long between, because obviously The Force Awakens ends with her getting to Luke,
yeah.
And it depends how long between that happens to where the space battle that Poe's in at the start happens. That's the time difference there, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't think there's much time at all, because as we cut away from the island, we're back with the fleet,
yeah,
who are being pursued. They've got some gizmo that allows them to track people who are travelling at warp.
It's not Star Trek.
Oh, sorry, at light speed.
It's not warp. Don't, you'll upset people.
Oh,
with
God,
that.
Don't upset anyone.
Yeah,
and hey, you know, I watched them both. In fact, I've been watching loads of them recently, and the Orville. But anyway, we won't get into that. Theirs is called something else as well. I can't remember what theirs is called, but anyway.
The Hollyhop Drop. No, that's Red Dwarf.
That's Red Dwarf, yeah. But we get to the fleet, which has got this weird standoff where they're travelling fast enough to be far enough away from what they call the First Order.
Yeah.
And then we get this really odd plot thing where they have to go off somewhere to get someone, to bring them back, to do something, to get them on the ship, to do something else.
What the thing was they can be tracked through light speed, so it doesn't matter where they go, they can be tracked by the First Order, but the First Order are only tracking the main ship, the one ship.
Yep.
So they had to, there was a way of Finn, because he worked for the First Order, so apparently he knows the schematics to every single ship they've ever had, because he
yep.
used to mop the floors there.
Yeah.
He knew of where the computery bit was that you could, if you turned it off,
light
it would
speed tracking device.
Yeah. He knew how, where that was, and Rose knew how to turn it off. But they needed somebody to get them onto the First Order ship. So they had to go and get this code breaker that Maz Kanata, who appeared in a hologram briefly, told them to go and get, and they fucked that up royally.
I did have a small nap during the casinos. I'm not going to lie. I know.
You are getting old now, Paul.
I am. It was an early showing, and there was a lot of trailer. I slept through the trailers, but Leo woke me up for the film. Is this 2.5 hours? It's a long, it's a 3-hour jolly in Cineworld. It's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I was speaking to somebody the other day, and I remember when the Cineworld where I live used to be an Empire Cinema, and there were some screenings where you'd go in and it was just trailers and film, no ads. And it was brilliant. You'd go in, 3 or 4 trailers straight into the film, it was none of this.
Is it now called a First Order Cinema?
Sorry?
I think I have to change it from Empire Cinema to a First Order.
Oh, very good. Mm. So I'm going to let you guys talk about the casino scene, because I did have a snooze.
None of it worked for me. I thought it was like prequel level stuff. There was CGI animals and chases, and the plot made no sense because it was just pointless in the end. Toro's character was completely irrelevant and not that good a character. Like I said earlier, I didn't mind Rose as a character. I thought she was fairly decent, but it was just that what she had to do was crap.
The thing that got me about the casino planet was there was that very heavy-handed conversation about the people being really evil and nasty because they're arms dealers. And it all seemed this very kind of heavy-handed anti-capitalist message going on there. And
the only thing that was interesting that came from that was when Benicio del Toro's character, I can't remember his name.
His name is BJ, apparently. That's how he's credited.
Yeah. He was making the point that, look, those guys, yeah, they've sold arms to the Empire, well, to the First Order. They've also sold them to you lot.
To the Resistance, yeah.
And that was the only kind of interesting bit, and they didn't really look at that a lot.
Yeah, I caught up. I didn't drop off for too long. I was there when they... when they met up with Benicio del Toro and tried to get him to come along and help them out and stuff.
You did miss that then. But I thought the one thing about the casino planet, I didn't have any problem with the actual plot of them going there. They had to give them something to do. It was more the way they spent the time running around the corridors like a pair of teenagers. Like, try and stay undercover. And you had BB-8 rolling around. And I like BB-8, but he kind of, you know, he got to blend in a little bit.
Yeah.
And the CGI llama chase, not crazy.
And there was just the sort of the hammered home bit about those kids, they're slaves and trying to ignite hope in them and all this kind of stuff. That didn't really work for me either.
Come into play at the end.
It did. It seemed a bit strange seeing them at the end playing with Star Wars toys as well. That's
taking product placement to a whole new level.
Yeah, very meta.
But this does lead on to characters dressed up as Imperials First Order being somewhere they shouldn't do, which is always good fun and a nod to the originals. And also I want to mention Supreme Leader Snoke. Now I have a real issue here, because in the first film you've got this shadowy sort of character in a fuzzy video, almost like the old sort of Emperor.
And the first time we see him in this film was, again, as a hologram, wasn't it? And he sort of, through this hologram and through the Force, like, controlled, you know, he put him on the floor and spun him round and threw him about. And it was kind of like, you know, when Vader, when he was in, I think it was in Empire, wasn't it? He threw, you know, he wasn't even on the same ship as one of the generals had messed up, and he choked them and then put one of the others in charge.
Yeah, but that was the point I was going to make. You've got this shadowy figure you've only seen as a hologram. Suddenly, you get to see him, you meet him, and you know, he's engaging with the characters in the story. And the next minute, the fucker's dead.
Yeah, that came out of nowhere, didn't it?
He didn't get out of his chair, did he?
I thought he was quite good as, you know, the character, and it was in that film you could see the way he was manipulating Kylo Ren and Rey, and you could see, and it was interesting. It was good. It was like having a kind of another version of the Emperor there, but for him to go that quickly, because I suppose the other thing is his backstory. No one knows who he is, what he's about, where he's from. All we know is that he saw the Empire rise and fall, so he's at least as old as, you know, he's at least as old as the Phantom Menace, you know, however long that is before the events of this film. We know nothing about him except that, and he's obviously quite in tune with the Force and the dark side. And now you just think, we're never going to know anything about him.
We might find out in the next one. There might be some further backstory about who he...
Well, there'll be some novel that they release.
Yeah, I don't
but
care about
once
that.
He's dead, does anyone really care? And more importantly, well, if you're doing a trilogy, you kind of... The baddie, for want of a better word, he's the guy who gets it last in the final act in the third film, middle way through the second.
I liked it, because it was so unexpected. There were so many sleight of hand and misdirections and surprises. I thought it was great.
The only way they can really explain Snoke now is sort of in the final film, Episode 9, is if you know, they're just sort of Kylo Ren is talking, or maybe even Luke as a Force ghost, or someone is talking and say, you know, Snoke saw the Empire and he came from here and he saw this happen and this is why he did this and this is why I believed in him and all this kind of stuff. And
yeah, it can be explained in a few lines of dialogue, but as I said, it was weird not to see that very important character not even stand up. Like, he spent his whole time sitting down.
Yeah.
But what I will say about him was, and this is something that I don't often, not very positive about, I thought the CG on Snoke was outstanding.
You had Andy Serkis playing him, though, didn't you? So his motion capture stuff is always excellent. So
yeah, but it's not even him; it's the actual way that the animators did the mouth, because that's so difficult to get.
Yeah,
it looked like a combination of practical and CG. So yeah, 10 out of 10 for the Snoke effects.
I liked his you know, having all those guards in there as well. That were, I assume, when Luke said, you know, some of my new Jedi order left with Kylo Ren and the rest he killed. I assume they were the ones that went with him.
So yeah, it was good to see them do something. Because the Emperor had a couple of Imperial guards who just stood there and never did anything. They always looked so cool. But also, the other thing about the Snoke scene was the actual set design, like that red room.
Yeah.
Stunning, especially on the big screen.
And that was one of the best parts of the film, wasn't it? That whole scene of those three in that room. And
the fight after as well. The choreography was really good.
Yeah.
With the two of them back to back.
Yeah.
Working together. Fantastic.
What did we think of Adam Driver?
I think he's...
Are you warming to him? Because, you know, I'm not... It's just that irritating bloke out of Girls. And I was actually thinking, at least he doesn't take his top off in these films. He does now.
He did, yes. Oh, is that something
I think he's fine, because in some ways he is meant to be this big, intimidating, bad guy. And he obviously is. If you're in the First Order, you're certainly intimidated by him. But he's also meant to be this really conflicted person who's still on the cusp of the dark and the light, if you want to look at the Force in that way. He almost turned back in The Force Awakens. Han almost got him to come back with him. There's a lot of conflict in there. He's not meant to be like the Emperor or even Darth Vader for the majority, except for the last sort of act of the Return of the Jedi. Darth Vader's this intimidating, all evil bad guy, and so is the Emperor. Kylo Ren's not meant to be that. He is meant to be intimidating, but he's not. He's meant to have conflict and issues, and you know.
Yeah, no, I guess so. I just find him. I've always found him really irritating because he always plays the same character in every thing I've seen him in, and this is no exception. Really irritating, weird prick.
I like him. I think Kylo Ren's an interesting character, and I've only seen him in this, and I think he was in a Coen Brothers film as well, wasn't he? And that's it.
What do we make from that scene then as well, the end of that kind of throne room scene of the reveal that Rey's parents were nobody?
I think I was glad.
Not that she didn't have parents, Anakin was created by the Force. Like, they were not anyone of any significance.
There were hints of a reveal, and then the reveal was there's no reveal.
Yeah, which I like.
And I still think from what you saw in The Force Awakens when she got given Luke's lightsaber, and there was that whole thing of her flashback, and you could hear Yoda's voice and Obi-Wan's voice and all of that in these visions that she was having. I still think there's a chance, and it wouldn't surprise me if it turned out that was a bluff from Kylo Ren. He was trying to get her to join him by saying, you're not special. There's nothing special about you. Like, you think there is. Come and join me. You know, we can rule the galaxy together. There's nothing special about you. Your parents weren't anyone. You've got no destiny. There's a part of me that thinks that, but part of me thinks, no, it's almost better for her parents not to be anyone, because it's like, it's then like, well, the Force is for anybody. You know, anybody could be fine. You don't have to be a Skywalker or a Kenobi or whatever to be a strong person in the Force.
No, they don't, because they reinforce that at the end with that kid, the broom.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, and also I think a lot of the hype about who are Rey's parents wasn't coming from the Lucasfilm, it was coming from nerds on YouTube and blogs.
Well, everybody, it seemed from The Force Awakens that everybody had to be related to someone, because everyone was speculating. Well, in the build-up to The Force Awakens, they did, I think it J.J. Abrams did say, we've deliberately not given Rey and Finn surnames because their parents are somebody. I think he hinted at that. And so everyone's saying, well, Finn, well, whose parents can Finn be? Well, there's only ever been two other black guys in these films. So he's either Lando's son or he's Mace Windu's descendant. So it's,
imagine if they cut away to Darth Vader hanging out the back of a hooker. Yeah. And that was her mum, and you know, Vader had gone down for some shore leave and tupped her. I always would have rolled out. No,
well, mind you, I don't think he had much of a willy left.
No, after it got burnt off on the planet.
Yeah. if his legs got burnt off, that definitely got burnt off.
Well, he's kept it in one of those BAFTA tanks or whatever they're called. It's just floating around.
We deal with the real Star Wars issues on this podcast. Did Darth Vader still have a functioning penis or not?
Yeah, but I mean, as well as that, you must think, what did the Emperor and Darth Vader do for fun? They must have done something for fun. It can't have all been just killing people, subjugating rebellions, and you know, murdering younglings. They must have had, like, at some point, a day off where they went and did something they enjoyed. Like, they went and watched a pod race, or they went to, you know, what do they do for fun?
I think you're underestimating the Sith. I don't think they do anything for fun. I mean,
everyone has an off day, don't they? Everyone needs to chill out for a day. You know, did the Emperor ever have a duvet day?
Bit of downtime.
Yeah. Just like, I can't be bothered today. I don't have to call in sick. I'm in charge, but I'm just not doing anything today. I'm just going to stay in bed and do nothing. Surely.
Well, that's I don't know if you've seen it yet, but the Star Trek spoof series, The Orville, it takes space, but then adds in real world problems and issues and things like that. And do you know what? I don't want Star Wars to do that, and that's why I didn't like some of the comedy and stuff like that. And I want Star Wars to remain fairly, you know, serious and almost boring in a way. I don't want these people like chasing tail and stuff.
You want Senate meetings and
exactly, yes,
trade embargoes.
Yes,
yeah. Like we all. It's what these last few films have missed. It's just endless Senate meetings.
where have we got to in the story?
We've come back from the casino. I suppose we've realised that's all going wrong. Laura Dern is where we've got to.
I thought that was a strange one because soon as Poe, was his name? Is that his name?
Yeah.
The way he speaks to her. I thought, yeah, that's not gonna wash, not in this day and age. So she's gonna do something incredibly noble and heroic, and he's gonna be proved massively wrong.
Yeah, but it was just like, fine if she'd done that, fine, she can still have her heroic moment. But why didn't she just tell people what the plan is? Like,
yeah,
tell everybody. You've only got 400 people on that ship. Tell them what's going on. Like, because then you can just say, that's what we're doing. If you haven't got a better idea, we're doing it, or give me a better idea and we'll do that instead.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and be really really unpopular, but I think they are slightly overcompensating for sort of strong female characters.
Yeah. But I thought that, what did you actually think of her heroic moment? I thought it was quite good.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic.
You know, the whole ploy of jumping into light speed.
It was amazing.
I thought it looked brilliant. I thought it was a good way to do it. You know, it gave her moment. I suppose the thing would have been if I'd rather have not seen
that moment coming than have a really clunky way to engineer that moment to happen.
It was telegraphed, but like, yeah, I thought it looked good, and
it sounded amazing. It was just like, it was almost silent before that.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
And then we kind of get into the final part of the film, don't we? The final act.
Onto the planet Salt, whatever it's called.
Yes, the old base.
Memories of Hoth.
Memories of Hoth and
Do you know what my favourite thing about that whole final scene? The red. I know it's supposed to be salt.
Yeah.
Was it sand under salt? The red on the landscape?
I think it was salt, because didn't the...
Yeah, they say it's salt.
Didn't that guy, the whoever it was, one of the rebel leaders, he stood out of the trench, didn't he? And there was a red footprint under him. And I think you know, the other rebels must have thought that he'd picked up an injury and that was blood pooling. And the guy put his finger in, didn't he, and said, no, it's salt.
I'm not a chemist, so if any of our listeners are, I'd love to know whether red relates to salt and the chemical reaction. Is that heat? What is that that's causing it to go red?
Oxidization. what I'm going with till I get a better answer.
I don't know. No, Dave, talk to me about oxidizing salts.
Well, for a start, look, don't forget, it is a galaxy far, far away, so things are very, very different. But I think you're right. Wasn't it red sand under white salt?
It could have been. I don't know.
It looked good, though, didn't it?
Yeah. It's amazing. As a visual, it was stunning.
Yeah. And I like, you know, their just the amount of the First Order walkers coming down, and
it was very much like Hoth, wasn't it? Because
what they actually should have done was, I know it wouldn't have kicked up the red as much, but what they should have done is had those the ships that the Resistance were in trying to fight them. They should have had those as the old snow speeders, just like battered up versions of them.
Yeah, because those ships they use they are proper old rickety things, aren't they? So I didn't quite like.
Yeah.
They're really falling apart.
Yeah. But that whole scene looked good. I'd liked Luke coming back at that point. The whole kind of reveal about him actually physically not being there.
Oh, no, but did you think he was there to start with?
I
did, but I also...
Because he went and spoke to Leia and 3PO and everything, so he came in. So I thought, well, yeah, he's actually there.
This a new level of force projection that we've obviously not seen before? But have they gone from, you know, we talked earlier about people being able to communicate and how they went from glimpses to full-blown conversations?
Yeah, but the thing is, if you look at the prequels, okay, you had an established Jedi Order, but if you look at the original trilogy, you didn't have many Jedi, and Luke was learning all the time, and his masters would get killed quite quickly, so they couldn't actually teach him much. There's probably a lot of the Force that he's learned, you know, in the intervening year.
Reading those Jedi books is probably a page to do that in the instructions.
Mind you, he did say to Yoda, "I've only flicked through them."
Oh yeah,
Yoda said, have you actually read them? I've had a flick through.
Didn't Yoda say a page turner? They are not.
Yes,
which again is a modern joke, which hadn't only usually been seen before. But the other thing about Luke was, and I think you have to go back and see it again, he didn't make any footprints in the salt and
did he?
Sand.
Did he not?
No, he didn't.
Is that why the footprint at the start was such a thing?
I think it was all very intentional.
Gotcha.
I didn't even pick up on that, but I did. I did like
nothing's done without a reason in these films. No, everything was done for the very specific, because you got finite amount of time. Everything's planned out. So now you've said that, Dave, that footprint is absolutely why. Yeah,
exactly. And also the fact that he appeared at the back of the cave and then they realised they couldn't get out. And then you start thinking, well, how did Luke get in? And of course, then it's all...
Yeah, of course.
I think Rian Johnson, the writer and director, he's a clever man. He knows exactly what he's doing.
I'm quite happy that he's got... I mean, really, it won't make a final decision until I know what the subject matter of that trilogy is going to be, the trilogy that he's doing. Because he's been given his own Star Wars trilogy, hasn't he?
Apparently so.
But, you know, I'd like to know what the subject of that would be, because they've just said it will be about characters and a part of the galaxy that we haven't seen before. But, yeah.
So we're only on number two, aren't we, of the next trilogy?
Yes.
Yes.
So what the fuck are they going to do for the third? For our generation...
Well, yeah, let's get to the end of this film first. So I actually thought, because I didn't pick up on what David picked up on, the footprint and him coming back to the cave. So when they opened fire on him, I actually thought that was him gone. And I thought, that's a terrible way to get rid of him.
Oh, that would have been awful.
Like, because you see, like, the red blow up when the first laser hits where he stood.
Yeah.
You hear see all this red kick up, and I thought, well, he's just been incinerated. Yeah, he's gone.
No, I thought he'd flown up in the air and was on a cliff somewhere.
Then just see him keep firing and firing, and then him just walk out of it. That was a good scene.
Remember at the beginning of Force Awakens when Kylo Ren stops that laser in midair?
Yeah.
I thought Luke might do a version of that where he's basically stopped all of those lasers in midair and was just then going to fly them back, if you see what I mean.
Like, yeah, that would have been... but then...
What did you think about the you saw the shoulder thing.
Yeah.
Oh, you mentioned that earlier. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's a little touch. It's a little moment. It's the kind of thing that Bond would do, or any kind of action hero. Maybe Luke wouldn't do it, but it's fine.
I did like the whole reveal when he wasn't actually there. Like, you know, he physically wasn't there.
Because it really
but the whole up. Interaction with between him and Kylo Ren
is so that's his nephew, uncle and nephew, isn't it?
Yeah. But then Luke's gone.
Yeah. Well,
pissed me off so much.
Really?
Yeah.
Anticlimactic.
I just, as much as I like the kids who are coming through, I need some anchor from the past for me to be really engaged with them.
But I suppose they did that because from the conversations that I read about around this film. So by the time they wrap this and by the time it's finished filming and all ready to go, Carrie Fisher unfortunately died.
Mm-hmm.
But she had, you know, she said to J.J. Abrams and is it Kathleen Kennedy?
Yeah.
She'd said to them something like, right, so the Force Awakens was Harrison's film. This one was Mark's film. That last one better be my film. And they were like, yeah, it's going to be. Oh, like, she was going to be, she was meant to be like a big, big part of that episode 9.
And now she never will be.
Yeah, I did like when Luke came back and saw her and she said, I've changed my hair. I thought that was quite funny. I thought that was a joke that landed.
It was a good joke, but I also thought she was, because she hasn't seen her brother for a very long time, I thought there might have been a bit
but maybe,
of a reaction.
But maybe she knew that wasn't him, because we know that she can use the Force and fly through the air now.
Very true.
So maybe she knew that actually wasn't him physically.
But I touched upon this a second ago, but for our generation, not including you, obviously, Steve, but, you know, in a way, Han's gone.
Yeah.
Luke's gone. Leia's genuinely gone. I can't believe they didn't at least change it so Leia went and Luke stayed. So at least you've got... Because what's going to happen
Luke
in
hasn't
the next...
Luke hasn't gone. He's going to be back with a blue haze around
him. I don't want a blue haze. That doesn't count.
But there is a Skywalker left. There's Ben Solo. There's Kylo Ren. It's now about him, isn't it? It's going to be his story.
I guess so, but...
There's Clive Skywalker, his sort of third cousin.
We don't talk about Clive.
He's a plumber on Tatooine.
Yeah, oh, that idiot.
He thinks his moisture farms for a living. and then one day we'll find out he's like 50-odd now, but one day it'll just sort of tune into the Force. He'll be sat there thinking, I need that wrench. And it will just sort of come over to it. It'll be a bit, Jesus Christ. And it'll be, Clive Skywalker.
I just felt almost deflated at the end. It is the end of an era.
No, because Lando's coming back. They've not announced that. He must be. Billy D's got nothing on.
But would you have preferred, knowing that Carrie Fisher's no longer with us, that was her... You know, they wrote her out of the film.
I still would have liked to have seen Luke go in the final film.
Yes.
But it didn't overly annoy me, but I would have liked to have seen him go at some point in the final film doing something properly heroic but...
Because he's not had his massive lightsaber fight that we're all expecting.
No.
But also, the other thing about Leia... was that no one knew Carrie was going to die. I mean, looking,
yeah,
if they'd done it,
it's a difficult situation for everyone.
They could have finished
the film was well past finished filming when it happened, and they're obviously quite happy with the film. The question is how do they write her out of it now? Because they said they won't kill her off. They're not going to kill her character off, I don't think. But also, they're not going to CGI her in like they did with Peter Cushing, or even like they did with young Leia in Rogue One. Even though her brother and her daughter have said they'd be okay with that, they said, yeah, that's fine. You can, if you want to use her images and whatever, you want to do that, that's absolutely fine.
But the thing with Luke
assuming that Carrie Fisher would have loved that.
All they had to do was cut out 2 seconds of footage of Luke disappearing into an empty dressing gown, and that could have left it open to explore different possibilities going forward.
Yeah.
It wasn't a massive edit, was it?
No, I mean, assuming they've got planned what's going to happen in episode 9, but what do we think is going to happen? Because we know, obviously, we've got to the end of this film now.
Not quite.
Not quite.
How, in right at the end, because they're in the Millennium Falcon, they're talking about how's the resistance going to continue. Carrie Fisher says, "Oh, you know, we have all the ingredients here to for that to happen."
They've just got Chewie flying the Falcon with a couple of space penguins.
Yeah, but then you don't. But then you.
I did think it was funny when Chewie was eating them, though.
Yeah, that was funny.
that was funny.
The bits he was in, I liked.
Sorry?
How much time has passed from that from the Falcon to that kid with the Rebel Alliance ring and the broom?
Oh, I think it was.
What he's saying is that just us being here and our story is enough for the rebellion to continue and flourish. And then it cuts to that kid with the ring. Is that supposed to be 20, 30 years down the line?
No, it was there and then. Because we saw that kid.
Yeah.
He was. Oh! You were asleep, weren't you, Paul?
Yeah, asleep.
Just during. Yeah, you saw that kid earlier at the beginning of the llama chase.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was that. Okay, that was on the casino. Place,
exactly.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I fell asleep through that bit. Okay, so there's no time passed then.
No.
That'll teach me.
So where do we see episode 9 going?
It's impossible to tell.
Isn't it? There's no. You know, the resistance will obviously be built back up to a level where they can take on the First Order. Yeah. Something will happen. To give them some kind of military army force
that's where Lando comes in. He's maybe raising an army somewhere.
Well, do we think we will see coming back? I think Lando will come back, especially now Carrie Fisher's gone, and I know Mark Hamill will definitely be back as Luke as a Force ghost or whatever. But you know, I think he will come back in that film. In what capacity, I don't know, but I mean. Yeah,
I think Kylo Ren will make a new Vader mask.
Well, he can do what he wants now. He's not got Snoke manipulating him, so he is.
And I think the Irish fella with the ginger hair, he'll get his comeuppance.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Captain Phasma dying,
or has she?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't surprise me if she managed to get out of that somehow.
She's covered in chrome. Mm-hmm. It's good protection.
Yeah,
she fell down that thing. You didn't see her actually die. Yeah.
It just seemed a bit of a stupid way to shoehorn her in, and then. But
she makes a great toy, I assume.
Well, yeah, I've read as well. Apparently, that Prince William and Prince Harry cameoed as stormtroopers in this.
I've read that they haven't.
No, I read they had.
No, I heard it was a rumor, but I've also heard that
Gary Barlow did.
Worse?
Jimmy Savile.
James Corden.
Oh, fuck off.
Are you a little bit too fat to be a stormtrooper?
Oh, God. I hate all that. It really, really winds me up.
Celebrity cameos buying themselves into a role. Although that said, wasn't Tom Hardy rumoured to be a stormtrooper as well?
Yeah, and Daniel Craig was in Force Awakens.
That was
just confirmed. Stop it! You don't need to do this.
Gareth Edwards, director of Rogue One, was on the Salt Planet.
That's a bit different. If you're directing one of them, you know, that's all right. If you're actually putting some work into one of the other films,
yeah, you've got a legitimate reason. There's a proper connection.
Yeah. So, where would you rank this amongst the three new films and obviously in line with the other seven?
I would say of the three new ones, this is the third best. I thought The Force Awakens was just so much fun and a great way to get back into Star Wars. Like, a lot of people had lost faith from the prequels, and you know, when Disney bought it, and you think, do we really want them doing stuff with it? Why can't they just leave it alone? But then they came back and made that. I know it was almost beat for beat a remake of A New Hope, but it was just so much fun. It was so enjoyable, and it was just Star Wars. And Rogue One, I thought, was just really clever for like a film that wasn't part of the main saga, the Skywalker saga, but it told an important story about how they stole the Death Star plans, and it did it in a really clever way, a really good way, and it was interesting. The characters were good. It looked really good. You know, it had that probably the best Darth Vader scene in any film we've seen, and yeah, I just thought it was. So I think The Last Jedi, well, I liked it, it was good. It's third best out of the new ones.
Dave?
As you remember from the first time, our first podcast, I didn't like Force Awakens that much when we first saw it and we spoke about it. I saw it again on the big screen and I've seen it several times on DVD and I now really, really love it. Rogue One we saw last year and I haven't had any desire to go back and see that again, which I think says quite a lot. And I really, really want to see Last Jedi again. At the moment, it's just behind Force Awakens for me.
What would you say, Paul?
Same as you, Steve, actually. I've got them as 1, 2, 3, exactly the same as you. I thought this was the weakest, but I applaud it for, although it still did template off Empire significantly, I did applaud it for trying new and different stuff. And I hope for the next one, if I see any Ewoks, I'm going to fucking pull the seat out of the cinema and throw it at the screen.
Well, we've got Porgs now, haven't we?
Is that the penguin things?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to have seen Chewbacca get one of those and fuck it.
I just thought it was hilarious when he was roasting one.
Not spit roasting it, like Paul.
Mate, did your audience all start going, oh,
yeah, they did.
No.
Really, the one I was in did, and my eyes nearly rolled out the fucking top of my head.
The monks on the Jedi planet, the Jedi island as well.
Oh, the fish monks.
Yeah, they were all right, weren't they?
Yeah, right. they're just interested. You know what? You know why? Why are they caretakers? If they, you know, should Luke and Rey been having to a bit more of a chat at them if they're looking after the oldest Jedi temple knocking about?
Perhaps, yeah.
Should probably have a little bit of a conversation with them. But yeah, so that's The Last Jedi.
And maybe whatever's next. We've got, isn't there a Han Solo film next?
Han Solo origin story next, which just seems pointless to me.
Yeah, no one's looking forward to that.
No, I don't. They don't need to do origin stories for any of these characters. We know Han Solo is a smuggler, and he's got a bigger.
He's going to do the Kessel Run, though.
Oh,
yeah, but
you know he's doing it.
that'll just be Space Fast and the Furious, won't it? Exactly. They'll probably make it into some race where there's a load of other ships doing it as well or something.
They're going to build to that.
All we know is he's a smuggler. He's cool. He's got a black mate and a hairy mate.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know about him, really.
You've just reminded me, actually, when I saw The Last Jedi, I went with my hairy mate and bumped into my black mate. So I was Han Solo.
This part of the podcast, we said, like we said at the beginning, we are going to go through our five favourite films from the 5 years that Failed Critics has been going, and also do our one worst one as well. I'm not quite sure how the rest of you have done this. I've picked one film from every year except 2017. So I've done 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16. I picked one film from each of those years. We'll do this in the round robin format. Dave, would you like to start us off?
Okay, I'd love to go first. I haven't done mine like you. I haven't done one from every year. I've done it in reverse order. So my fifth choice of best film of the year, best film of the last 5 years, Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master. Which when I first saw it, I found it a very difficult film to get into. But I've been back and seen it several times, and I think it's a stunning bit of work with an incredible performance from Joaquin Phoenix and from Philip Seymour Hoffman and Amy Adams. Fantastic film.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fucking long, I know that. that's not much
probably
of a contribution, is it?
The same length as Last Jedi. But of course,
that's fucking long as well.
There's no lightsaber fights in The Master.
Okay. Paul?
Well, I've gone for a documentary which I think Dave has seen. In fact, I know you've seen as well, Steve. And that is David Farrier's exploration of the world of competitive tickling.
Oh.
And Tickled.
Tickled. Yes, you put me onto that. Good choice.
It's I think it's on Prime Video as well. So if you haven't seen it, you should absolutely watch it. And perfect for this segment, because the less you know, the more fun the film is. So on that note, I shall shut up.
Yeah. I'm going to... Well, my first film comes from 2012, which is the year that we got failed critics going. It's the Avengers Assemble, and it's partly because it's the second film we ever reviewed on the podcast, and it was the first big film that we reviewed on the podcast, so it kind of holds that in it for me. But also, it had a lot of superhero films come out, good, bad, indifferent, but this was for me still probably the best of them. It was a lot of fun. It pulled in all these characters together. It worked on pretty much every level. But it's in there for two reasons. One, because it's a bit of a nostalgia, because it's kind of where we started this podcast. And two, because it's probably the best of that kind of superhero film.
What's your number four then, Dave?
Number four is the only film from the last 5 years to make me cry my eyes out like an absolute baby.
Ooh.
And I thought... I was just taken by surprise, and I watched it again a couple of days later, and it had exactly the same effect. And that is the film Creed, the Rocky spin-off. I think it's an amazing bit of work, and I don't quite know how they pulled it off. I remember when they announced it, I thought, well, who wants to see
it? Is this the one where he's running along and all the skateboarders are running along with him?
Well, that's one part of it, yeah. That's not the entire...
You cried during Creed?
I cried at the end of Creed. I thought it was a remarkably well-made film. It took me by surprise. Yeah, I think it's a fantastic film. And I don't know how they did it. Like, it's not like incredible cinematography or great performances. It's just a very well-told film. And Stallone was wonderful. What's the name of the guy that plays Apollo Creed's son? Michael B. Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought he was great.
No, I really, really enjoyed it. I didn't get that emotional response, and I'm actually shocked that that's in your list. I'm really pleased, to be fair. Yeah.
But yeah, that's my number four.
Paul, your number four?
My number four is a small Dutch film set in the Calvinist community about a widower who befriends a guy who's got brain damage, and it's called Matterhorn. I've droned on about this on the podcast in the past. I think it's an incredible film. This generally does make me cry, but it also makes me laugh hysterically. And if you haven't seen it, it's not that easy to find, to be fair. You're either buying a Dutch DVD. I don't think it's on streaming services, but it's from 2013, and it's called Matterhorn. Dave, you've seen this, haven't you?
I watched it around at yours, yeah, and I'd like to see it again, because I think it was one of those days where there was a lot going on around yours, so I didn't quite get into it. It was entertaining and it was funny. I remember it being quite funny. And, interesting choice. But I think you must be the only person to rate Matterhorn that highly.
Yeah, pretty much. This is like 1,500, although it's got a really high IMDb score, and there's plenty of 10 reviews for it.
Yeah.
I just think nobody's seen it.
My fourth pick is 2013. It is Rush, the Formula One biopic of James Hunt and Niki Lauda, with Chris Hemsworth as Hunt and Daniel Brühl as Lauda. I thought it was just exciting and looked really good. I thought it was quite a good look. It's not many good sport, like really, really good sports movies, especially recently. I just thought that was really good. Made a sport that I genuinely find quite boring, quite interesting, and that rivalry between the two of them.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'm not a big Formula One fan, but I really, really enjoyed that. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah.
Rush nearly made my worst film of the last 5 years, so that's very interesting that you both like it that much.
Okay, Dave, your third pick.
My third film is Mike Leigh's Mr. Turner. I thought Timothy Spall has never been better, and it was also the best sort of British period film since Barry Lyndon. The cinematography knocked my eyes out. It was just all round fantastic film. Either of you two seen Mr. Turner?
I've not seen it. It looked costumey.
It is very costumey, but it's just superb.
Do you know what? On your recommendation, Dave, I will app anything that comes up in this discussion that I haven't seen, I promise I will.
Same. Yeah, I'll make a pledge to do that.
Steve won't.
Paul, your third choice
is a little known Russian documentary crime drama called Credit for Murder, made by a guy called Vladi Antonovich. And it investigates the world of Russian neo-Nazis. Just for the one scene alone, to ingratiate himself with these fucking horrendous people, he lets them shoot him. He puts on a bulletproof vest in the woods and lets these racist fuckers shoot him.
What, a documentary?
Yeah.
Does it for real? Oh, right.
Yeah, absolutely for real. Wow. It's I chatted online with the guy who made the film. It's got 33 people have seen it, according to IMDb. And I said, well, you know, why is it not on Storyville? Because this is a absolutely perfect Storyville film. And apparently they viewed it and passed on it, which is incredible. But it's from 2015. It's called Credit for Murder. I think you can rent this on Vimeo for like a couple of quid. And it's absolutely amazing. You should definitely, definitely watch it.
Okay. My third choice is from 2014, and I'm going there for Guardians of the Galaxy because I just thought it was incredible fun. It was the most Star Wars thing I'd seen since Star Wars. It just, I know it's a superhero film, but it was kind of not, it was like a sci-fi adventure. It was just so much fun, so funny, so just loved every minute of it. And that's partly why I go to the cinema. It is to enjoy myself and have some escapism. Although, yeah, you watch the other type, the grittier and Oscar-nominated films and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's primarily the reason I go to the cinema, is to enjoy myself. And that, I just enjoyed myself constantly for the whole duration of it.
And that, do you know what, Steve? Brilliant. And that's why we do this podcast, because everyone likes different stuff.
But it's like,
I love that film as well.
But it's like you watch stuff like, say, I'm trying to think of a good example, like 12 Years a Slave, I thought was a really good film, deserved all the plaudits it got. I'm never going to watch it again because it was a fucking harrowing watch. And it was like, yeah, I thought it was really good, but I'm never going to watch that again because it is in a lot of ways, I didn't enjoy it. Guardians of the Galaxy, stuff like that, I watch quite often because it's 2 hours long and it's fun.
Yeah, no, mate, I'm not a film snob, as you know.
And
I'll watch fucking anything and everything. So I'm really pleased to see some big blockbusters included in this discussion, because none of mine are.
Your second pick, Dave.
My number two is a film I've been waiting nearly 30 years to see. I don't do superheroes at all, but I do Bond, and that's why number two is Skyfall. Came out in 2012, and it just, I can't say too many good things about Skyfall. It is the greatest Bond film I've ever seen. It was the best looking Bond film. The action was incredible. I loved it. I can't believe how much I love Skyfall, and it's my number two.
Skyfall, I enjoyed that as well. I'm not mad on the new Bonds.
Yeah.
Being a big Bond fan, but I really, really enjoy Skyfall.
I never quite got the hype over Casino Royale. Everyone went crazy for that. And I thought, well, it's good, but it's not what I've been waiting for. But Skyfall had the perfect blend of like the modern post-Bourne identity gritty stuff and a bit of the old Roger Moore.
Oh, hang on. No, wait. Skyfall, is the one after Skyfall?
Yeah, Spectre came
on. Oh, no, I like Spectre. You're I didn't Spectre. Like Skyfall. Sorry. I think we've put it on and turned it off three times.
What, Skyfall?
Yeah, is that the one where he goes to Scotland?
At the end, yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't like that. No, that's the one we binned off. That's as far as I've got. That was the one I walked out of at the cinema. I went to Asda and bought a toaster.
You idiot. Fair enough, but like you say,
Spectre's really good. Don't worry about Skyfall.
Okay.
Okay, Paul, your second pick?
My second pick is an Argentine revenge anthology called Wild Tales from 2014, which I know you've both seen.
No.
At least twice.
Have you seen it, Dave?
I've never heard of Wild Tales.
Oh, no. God's sake.
I'm writing it down because, as I said, I made a pledge to watch all the films I haven't seen. So credit for mentioning Wild Tales.
This is genuinely, you've got I think it's five little sort of vignettes all based around revenge. And the trouble with anthologies normally is you get a load of filler and one good one. These are all fucking amazing. And especially the last one where a bride gets wronged on her wedding day and her reaction is absolutely beautiful. So you make it a priority to watch Wild Tales if you haven't. It's absolutely amazing.
Will do. I like a good anthology film. I'll be all over that. Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome.
Steve, your number two?
My number two is from 2015, and that is The Force Awakens, just because a lot of the reason is the same as The Guardians of the Galaxy. I just had so much fun watching it, and all this trepidation about them kind of not rebooting, but making more Star Wars films after Disney bought it off of Lucas. You're thinking, why are they doing it? Why can't they leave it? This comes out and you think, no, actually, do you know what? It was good. They were right to do it. I love Star Wars. And if they're going to keep making films like that, Rogue One and The Last Jedi, they can keep making Star Wars films, as far as I'm concerned. Your top pick, Dave?
My number one film of the last 5 years is Under the Skin.
Great choice.
It's the most original film I've seen from the last 5 years. I think it's one of the best science fiction films of the last 60 years. It's up there with like 2001 and The Man Who Fell to Earth. I've never seen anything quite like it. The music by Mika Levy was just mind-blowing. It's such a good film. It's atmospheric and weird and interesting and beautiful and odd. Oh man, that's why I watch films, for films like Under the Skin, where you can watch it and you go, well, I've never seen anything quite like that before. Either of you both seen it?
Yeah, I absolutely adored it. Did you like it, Steve?
I honestly can't remember. I know I've seen it, I just can't remember, to be honest.
There was nudie stuff in it.
There was, yes.
I like Scarlett Johansson driving around in a fucking transit van picking up ugly blokes in Glasgow. Yeah. It's fucking genius.
Exactly. Do you know, if it had been sold to me like that, I thought there's no way I'm going to watch that. But I just happened upon it. And also, I love Jonathan Glazer that did Sexy Beast and what's the other film he did? Birth. And it was, I can't wait for that guy to make another film.
And what's your final pick, Paul?
Well, I was just looking on IMDb and I've seen the date of this, so I feel I've not done a film in the last 5 years. However, this didn't land outside of its country until the last 5 years, and Dave will probably be able to guess what this is, because it's Frank Harm and Casper Christensen in Clown. Which there's no way that this was 7 years ago that it actually like made it out of Denmark, which is the most inappropriate, outrageous, filthy, disgusting, depraved comedy I have ever or will ever see. And I think it's utterly, utterly brilliant and charming and funny and charismatic. And I could just watch it again and again and again.
We had a very good time watching that together, didn't we? A few months
ago. We did.
We had a very late night and we stayed up.
I've never seen you proper like laugh, Dave. Yeah. I mean, actually lose the plot laugh. And watching your face that evening when we watched that together was absolute joy.
And you've got me into the series as a result, and it is just one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
They are just awful, awful human beings. But you love them.
Yeah, totally.
Have you seen this, Steve?
No.
Please watch it, please. Okay. 'Cause I promise you, you will fucking love it.
Okay. My final pick then comes from last year, 2016. I didn't see it until this year, actually, but it was Hacksaw Ridge, which I just thought was really, really good. I mean, I haven't seen many good World War II films of lately, and this was one of them for me. It was just really good, looked fantastic. I thought Andrew Garfield was good. Yeah, I just thought it was a really interesting story to tell, based on a true story.
It's the Mel Gibson directed one.
Yes.
Right, that's...
Yeah.
I haven't seen that. That's now on my list to watch.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. That when they're trying to get off that cliff, that's the one,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
He's come
so
a long
intense.
Way, Andrew Garfield. He's come a really long way. He's a good actor.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, but I mean, people don't know Hacksaw Ridge. It's about, it was World War II, and obviously American, British, whoever, lots of countries, people were conscripted into the armed forces. Because of his beliefs, he doesn't kill. He won't even hold a weapon. He won't even hold a rifle. But he won't. He wants to enlist because he feels that he should help his country, and it's not fair for him not to enlist.
He's a conscientious objector.
Yeah, but most conscious objectors don't.
Sign
go into
up.
The no, or they'll go and do like some kind of administrative work or something like that, like a desk job in the military. They won't, but I think from what I remember of the film and reading about it, he thought it'd be unfair for him not to go to war when all the other lads of his age were having to do it, and he felt like he should be helping his country against the Nazis or against Germany. Or Japan, actually, because it was Japan again in part of the war he was in, I think. But he wouldn't hold a rifle or fire a weapon or harm another human being. So I just thought it was quite interesting. And the film, yeah, the film was good, really good. Right, we're on to our worst films. Dave, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I will. Thank you, Steve. I've got it down to two, because there's one which I just detested, but there was also one which I really, really hated, but that's because I had high expectations for it. Can I do both?
Go on.
You can.
The one I detested was the so-called comedy Ted, the gross, horrible, unfunny piece of shit about the talking teddy bear and Mark Wahlberg. It's one of those films where you watch it and you go, that's why white men are so hated in this day and age. It's because of just insulting, horrendous, homophobic, misogynistic things like that. It was so unfunny. I the only reason I watched it because I was around a friend's house and he wanted to watch it and I was forced into watching it. It stunk.
Dave. Don't watch Ted 2.
Well, that's funny. Yeah, obviously. Yeah,
because I quite like Ted.
Okay.
I knew what I was getting into. In fact, The Guardian had that. I think that was number 2 in their top 10 of the year.
You're kidding.
Just to put... Oh, I'm not kidding you. Seriously, have a look. It was definitely in their top 10. However, if you think Ted is reprehensible, yes, you don't want to... Ted 2, I fucking hated it. It was everything you just said. Okay. It was vile and disgusting.
I will
but
never...
Ted... By comparison, I thought it was really funny.
I will never, ever, ever see Ted 2.
It would literally kill you.
Okay.
And what's the other one?
Well, the other one that I had such high expectations for going in, and I came
was Ted
out...
was Ted 2.
Hey!
It was the Man of Steel, and it's the film that really put me off superheroes for the rest of my life. I haven't seen a superhero film since that came out. It was a mess. It was a... Well, the I can't explain it. Have either of you two seen Red Letter Media's review of it? Just
watch. Oh, no, no.
And
no.
I know Owen's editing this, so thankfully you've got this bit in at the end, because I think he really liked Man of Steel.
I think he did. I think I remember listening to that podcast where Man of Steel was reviewed, and I was amazed that it got such a positive reaction. But no, it was a nightmare.
And... Paul, your worst?
Well, as you know, I do watch a lot of bad films.
You do?
So for me to pick a worst of the worst was quite challenging. If I said to you Gary Bushell, if I said to you Bobby George, if I said Willie Thorne and Dave Courtney, Would you know what I was talking about?
Is there an airport involved?
You do know.
Yeah. An airport?
Yes.
Yeah.
Gatwick Gangsters, which doesn't actually feature... I don't think there's an airport in it, which is the least of this film's problems. And I I've talked about things like Mob Handed and Killer Bitch, and they've been on this podcast many times as being an exponent of so bad, they're good, because there's so many horrendous, terrible things going on that you can't help but almost sort of enjoy them and laugh at them. Gatwick Gangsters is a car crash of epic proportions made by two heating engineers and their wife. And I feel bad because they've been really nice people. The lady who was in it, Champagne, Lady Sally Clack. So we exchanged a couple of emails before the film came out because I really wanted to review it. But this is a masterclass in how not to make a film. It makes no sense. The plot doesn't make any sense. There is no plot. It's just scene after scene after scene of nonsense. And it annoys me. People talk about The Room as being, you know, this masterpiece of so bad it's good. Fuck off. That's actually a film. This is a masterpiece in so bad it's good. It's really hard to see. You have to have a Microsoft account. You can only rent it from them. But if you get the chance, please, for the love of Christ, watch Gatwick Gangsters, because it's amazingly bad.
Worse than Essex Space Bin.
Worse than Essex Space Bin.
Worse than Kill Keith.
Worse than Kill Keith.
God rest his soul.
R.I.P. Yeah.
Dave, I'm not holding you to your thing about you're going to watch everything that's mentioned you haven't seen.
Yeah, I'm not. I was just thinking that I'll only watch the good ones that are mentioned, so I will not be watching Gatwick Gangsters or even Heathrow Hooligans, the inevitable follow-up.
The sequel.
Well, we had my worst film in the midst of the FIFA corruption scandal that rocked football and exposed just how corrupt the people who run the beautiful game was. Sepp Blatter, the man who was at that time president of FIFA, decided to release a biopic of himself and the beginnings of FIFA called United Passions.
Oh,
and it was just the worst. There was probably better Nazi propaganda than this. Like, there was, because essentially this was a propaganda film for FIFA to try and get people on side with them, and I think I would have got a leaflet dropped to me from Hitler from one of the planes. I would have probably believed that more than I would have believed this. I mean, Tim Roth was Sepp Blatter in this, and in the same year in Selma, he played like a racist senator or like politician in the US, and in United Passions, he played a more deplorable character. Partly my hatred of everything that FIFA stood for and their corruption made this film the worst ever. Partly the reasons it was made as well. It wasn't even like it was an outside company deciding to make a film about Blatter and FIFA and its beginnings. FIFA funded this and made this themselves.
Yes, in association with the Azerbaijan Film Council.
Yeah. Oh, God.
You know why I know this, because... a pal of mine at the time was the sports editor at the Daily Mirror, and they asked me to review this film on the basis that I was the only person who'd seen it. But that article, I think I'm on Wikipedia now and stuff as an authoritative source on this film, and the article I wrote for the Mirror has been shared tens of thousands of times. Is fucking awful, Steve. It is so bad. Oh my God.
But I think the thing that makes it worse is that, like I said, FIFA funded this. They made it themselves. It's not like I said, it's not like a film studio where, all right, we want to make a interesting historical sports film. Right, what we do, right, the beginnings of FIFA. Football's the biggest sport in the world, so we'll have a look at how that all became globalised and how the first World Cup was held and how FIFA was formed and everything, and then they got it completely wrong. Or they got a lot of help from FIFA in making it accurate, so they kind of had to paint FIFA in a good light, a little bit. No, it was made by Sepp Blatter for his own propaganda and for his own bloody ego boost, and it was just the biggest pile of shite ever.
Yeah, I just put up my review, and literally the closing line is, "United passions, if your passion is fibs."
Oh, well, I've just looked up United Passions on IMDb, and it's got a meta score of 1.
No.
I've never seen that. It's got 1.
1? Who's voted it 1?
Sepp. Sepp. Is it really? Only got 1?
Oh, on Meta.
That must be the lowest.
Metacritic. It's got the IMDb score is 2.1, which is
okay.
Very, very low. But yeah, meta of 1. And yeah, what the hell is Tim Roth playing at? Because wasn't he in that
other... He admitted that he only did it for the money.
Good. Yeah. You know that scene in the Simpsons episode, is it, when they asked Krusty why he did something, and he said, but let's just say it moved me to a bigger house. I said the quiet part loud and the loud part quiet, didn't I? And it's essentially that.
That's brilliant. I'm tempted to see it. It looks so terrible. Oh, and Gerard Depardieu's in it.
Yeah, Sam Neill as well, isn't he?
Martin Jarvis. I'd rather watch that than Gangster from Gatwick, or whatever it was called.
Yes, Sam,
on my IMDb, it's got the critics' reviews and Daily Mirror.
Paul, wasn't Sam Neill in United Passions as well?
Yep.
So yeah.
He was in Jurassic Park, where you had some corrupt billionaire recreating dinosaurs, and again, Sepp Blatter's the worst of the two of them.
Yeah, it's worth watching just for the. As Steve said, it really is a throwback to an actual propaganda film from the Second World War. Wow. It's that bad.
It's awful.
Can't wait.
Okay. Anyway, that brings this podcast to a close. It's been a pleasure, as always, talking Star Wars and other things with you too. And I hope everyone who's listened has enjoyed it. I'm sure we'll be back next year to review the Han Solo film in some capacity, whether it's under this banner or not. I'm sure we can get Owen and Tony to allow us to do a podcast on their other website for it.
Failed Critics Podcast is presented by Steve Norman and Owen Hughes, with contributions from different guests every week, with original music provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com from the track The Bandit, remixed by James Yule, who you can find at jamesyule.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Failed Critics, on iTunes and all good podcast apps, or you can check us out at failedcritics.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a rating or a review. And why not check out our sister podcasts, Character Unlocked and Bill De Mullinger's Underground Nights, from the Failed Media Network of podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.